Here's why you need to attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. Reason number one is networking. The opportunity to connect in person with like-minded recruitment business owners and share strategies and best practices. Of course, you can do that via Zoom or Teams, but the connection is deeper when you do it in real life. Wouldn't you agree? One of our previous attendees, Darcy, said that she loved the speakers and the content, but the best part for her was in between the sessions, the informal conversations with other successful business owners that sparked incredible insights and those aha moments. The quality of people in the room will be incredible, including many of the people you've heard me interview on this podcast. There's going to be big billing recruiters as well as business owners with multi-million pound businesses. What they all have in common is that they prioritize their own development. And no matter how successful they already are, they want to keep learning and growing. What's even more special and remarkable about this group is that they're all willing to share their knowledge and they're so generous at helping each other improve. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by David Perry. David is the managing partner of Perry Martell International in Ottawa, Canada. Over the last 35 years, David has negotiated over $400 million in executive salaries on five continents. In addition to being a top-producing headhunter, David is the author of a number of books on job search and recruitment, including Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunters 3.0, Hiring Greatness, How to Recruit Your Dream Team and Crush the Competition, and Executive Recruiting for Dummies. David's currently writing a fourth book with his co-author Ron Weens, and it's titled Revolutions Need Leaders, How to Recognize, Recruit, and Retain Leaders to Dominate the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Nicknamed the Rogue Recruiter by the Wall Street Journal, David teaches companies how to hire and keep the right executives, and he teaches candidates how to make business decisions that will shape their careers. David, welcome back. Thanks for being on the show again.
Well, happy new year. Thanks for having me back. You know, miracles never cease.
Happy birthday and, or I should say, happy new year and happy birthday, because today is your birthday.
Yep, number 64.
That is awesome. I am grateful that you took some time out on your birthday to record with me. That's awesome.
Well, to be honest, I didn't know it was my birthday. I knew I had the deal to do with you today, but I had forgotten it was actually my birthday. But I'm happy to be here. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. So I understand you just closed $250K in business before Christmas. What keeps you going after 35 years in the business that you seem to just have as much hunger and energy as ever?
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, it hasn't changed. I mean, I put 250 in before Christmas. I just put 610 in yesterday, and I'm sitting on $500,000 in fees right now that I got to deliver over the next month or two. Nothing, but you know, we're going to talk. Eventually, you're going to ask me questions about how do I do this. So let me answer the question first.
Okay.
So your readers will probably have an appreciation for this. You play pool, right?
Very badly and only occasionally, but I'm familiar with
okay.
Pool, yes.
So you're probably like most people. Most people and most recruiters are usually good for sinking a shot. Maybe a second one.
Okay.
Rarely a third one. Rarely can someone clean the table. So this is how we think about search. We get a lot of inquiries to do work for companies. We have a deal flow that just comes in because of my talks, the books, the whole nine yards. So when we're vetting a company, we're always thinking about, and I'm quite blunt with them, what's next? And now is a good example. We signed two deals. Officially, we started yesterday. We hired a VP of IT for a company. It took me, I don't know, 3 days to find the guy, 2 weeks to get him to talk to us, and five months to close the deal. You know, the interviews, and then we had to wait 3 months for the guy to join. He starts next Tuesday. My point being, this company had spent countless tens of millions of dollars putting in a system in their manufacturing facility. It had not been done correctly, primarily because the company had never hired a VP of IT for manufacturing before, didn't know what to ask, really didn't know what to expect. So they found someone who had great personality, really wowed them. They hired him, and 5 years later, he quit, never having delivered. My point being, when we're talking to this client, you know, we could have faced the same thing, right? We could have done a deal. They could have asked the wrong questions, and we'd be doing a replacement. You know, we have a one-year guarantee. So I said to the potential client, because we actually hadn't cashed their check yet, I said, okay, we're going to do this, and here's what we're going to do. You've seen the proposal. You're responsible for this, 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 and this. You basically show up. I'm going to ask all the questions on the first interview, a Zoom interview. I said, we'll get it right. We'll hire the first person. But hiring this person will fix your capacity challenge. But what about this? And what about this? Because these are the next two people you need to hire. Mm-hmm. If we do an outstanding job and you can still stand and look at my face when we're finished, will you consider letting us do this as well? And they said yes. Now, of course, they're going to say yes. Why would they say no? But they said yes, and we started those searches yesterday.
Awesome. So wait a second.
So this is like playing pool. Sorry about that. It's my ADHD. That's like playing pool. Before we do a deal, we want to look down the table and go, okay, what's the next ball? What's the next ball? What's the next ball? And oftentimes we won't take a search. Because we can't see the next one. And it's you know, you did this for a living. It's an inordinate amount of time that it takes to understand the culture, the fit of an organization. You know, skills, experience, that's a checkbox, right? It's the fit that counts. That's what takes all the time and energy at the front end. So I don't want to keep repeating this. I want to find a client that I can, you know, do a trifecta. In this case, it's VP IT, VP sales, VP operations. I'll do the trifecta, and then I can leave them alone, and they're going to explode with growth, as opposed to going and finding two more people, clients to do this with. No, I'll do it with the one, and they'll explode with growth. As they do, we'll step in to either train them or help them vet candidates that we teach them. You know, go get these guys yourself. You get a problem, call us. But that's how we do it. So that's the pool table analogy.
I love it. So yeah. When you explain it like that, it sounds obvious, but I never quite thought of it that way before. It's going to be easier to place three people with one company than three people with three different companies because you've already learned the culture, you've got the relationship, you're going to be able to identify the fit. That is brilliant. So can you just break that down? Go ahead, David.
Are you going to ask me about discounts now?
Uh-huh. Do you give them any?
No.
Okay.
So yes and no. The discount really is the amount of time they save in my getting the right individual into the role. When you're talking about an executive hire, even a director hire, even salespeople, there's a cost involved in not having the person in the role. And most people don't talk about that.
Great point.
We do.
When you are doing that intake call with a client and you're still evaluating, do we want to work together or not? Do you always almost pre-close them on those subsequent roles before you take the first one?
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Yes. I will. So great question. I will pre-close them. And this is exactly how we did it. I will pre-close them on doing the deal. And then we've done everything via Zoom. And what we said was, hey, you know, we haven't met yet. You may hate my guts. There's somebody somewhere that does. Anita, stop talking. That's my partner. So I said, well, let's meet. So we went down, we had the meeting. We had a 2-hour across the table where they asked us questions. I tell stories because that's what I do. And then I asked them questions and then I closed on this. I said, okay, we're going to do this. And when we do this, it's going to mean this, 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 and this. Okay. This is the value. And this is the financial value, and this is the value of you not having to do the job yourself, Mr. CEO, and not being able to sleep at night. I said, but when we do this, and it's fantastic, you're going to give us a reference and give us an opportunity to fill these other two roles. And he said, what other two roles? I said, well, you need one of these, you need one of these. I've already done the assessment of the of your company. I've been through the website. I've read all the stuff. I understand who you have on board. I understand where you are and where you want to go, and you don't have the skill set on board to make that happen. So all I'm saying is I'm just pointing out the obvious. If we do a great job, there'd be no reason to throw me under the bus other than pure pleasure. And I'm volunteering that if we do a great job, we will come and we like each other at the end of this. We'll come back and do the others. I said, you think about it now, what you really need from these two positions that you don't have yet. And so they went away to do that, and we went away to do our job.
Fantastic. I love that.
Does that answer that question, Mark? Sorry.
You not only ask you for, assuming you do a great job, which of course you will, you're going to get the other two searches. You also are getting them to agree that they'll give you referrals as well.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And they already have. You know, we don't just want you. I always say this to all my clients. Working for you and serving you is one thing, but I want access to all your friends. And I want you to be proud to, you know, to pass my name on. Because that's what happened 40 years ago in real estate. I mean, that's how we ended up doing the Canary Wharf project.
That's right.
In London. Yeah. From Ottawa, for God's sake, right?
Yeah.
And the company is in Toronto, so it's not like I knew anybody. But I got passed from family to family to family. And this is how we approached the business. It's a longer-term strategy. And I haven't done Smile and Dial for years. I still do it. I'll still take an NPC and put lipstick on them and take them to the market. But I do it only if they're absolutely extraordinary, because every time I place somebody, I'm not just placing that one person with that one company. Maybe it's a niche I haven't been in before, and I want to dominate that niche. I want to take the top one or two companies that can play with my current client without interference and make them clients. That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, this is a tangent, David, but I don't know if I know the Canary Wharf story. I do know that the builders were Rothman, right?
O&Y, yes.
And there are buildings there named after Canadian cities. What's the connection?
You mean to me or to the deal?
Both. Yeah. How did you get involved in Canary Wharf?
Well, I had done a deal with a gentleman by the name of Jonathan Weiner at Canderel,
okay,
which is a development company in Montreal, back in 1986 or 87. We helped them open up or establish their foothold in Montreal, where they were growing, okay, in Ottawa, and then Toronto. And then I got introduced by him to Lauren Braithwaite, who ran the biggest shopping centers consortium in the country.
Okay.
And then he introduced me to the guys that had just finished doing the Dome Stadium. That's where the Blue Jays play. You know, he was at a party and said, oh, well, you talk to this guy. And these guys, I hired this was Omer's Realty, the Ontario Municipal Employees Retirement System. These two guys finished doing the Dome Stadium. Omer's is the biggest pension fund in the country. They hired these two guys and said, here's a check. They wrote them a check for $3.8 billion and said, go buy real estate. And I was talking to Lauren. Lauren said, call Chuck. And I called these guys and they needed a CFO. They needed a CFO who understood real estate, did business internationally. What was the other thing? Oh, and he skied. And that was the clincher. So I needed a CFO who understood real estate and had done business on both sides of the deal of the border and skied. Because why the skiing? Because Paul and Chuck Magwood used to go skiing before they would sign a deal. They'd get it right to the point they needed their signatures, they go skiing, and then they decide on the hill, yeah, we're gonna do the deal. So there were 21 guys in 19 companies in Canada that fit the bill. The guy we hired was a CA, MBA, PNG, 6'3", and skied.
He's in. The skiing was the clincher.
Yeah. Now, it took 6 months to close the deal.
Okay.
Because that was back when I did contingency. I got a 3-day head start on everybody else this is the God's honest truth. I got a 3-day head start on everybody else in the country. And when I presented the first guy that they ended up hiring, They said, okay, we like him, but we're going to open this up to everybody in the country now. It was a free-for-all. Great. Marty, his secretary, called me about 5 weeks in, and she said, listen, don't send anything because we need to change the fax machine. I said, why? She said, because we burnt out a fax machine with all the unsolicited candidates that are being sent in. I said, fine, do what you got to do. So March 1st, 1990, about this time, Marty called me and said, okay, Chuck got your message, and we're going to make that offer to Michael. I said, what message? He said, you left Chuck a message at about 5 o'clock in the morning. And she said, and Chuck heard it and said, okay, just do the deal. I said, Marty, this is his secretary. I have no idea what you're talking about. She said, well, we saved it. And she replayed it for me over the phone. Apparently, my wife had just given birth to my first child, Krista. It's her. So she's 34 in a couple of weeks. And I apparently picked up the phone and said, Chuck, David, listen, shit or get off the pot. I'm tired of this. He's the right guy. You're dragging your ass. This is not verbatim, but that was what it was. I said, just do the deal. Click, boom, so it did. So that was a huge fee at the time.
Fantastic.
In 1991, I think it was.
Wow.
That was 70,
and you had
70
no recollection of leaving that message. Hilarious.
Not a clue. Now, good news. I've closed two other deals when my son was born. In between contractions. I don't talk about it very much because sometimes Anita gets a little upset.
Yeah, no kidding. That's funny. By the way, I just looked it up. It wasn't Rothman. It was Reichman. Paul Reichman. Canadian property tycoon.
It's the Reichman brothers.
Yeah, Reichman brothers. That's right. But they're Canadian, but they built Canary Wharf.
Yeah, and a lot of other stuff.
Okay. Coming back to how you set up the kind of rules of engagement from the beginning with these clients, one of the things you mentioned was, here's what I'm responsible for. Here's what you're responsible for. Could you go into a little more detail about the mutual expectations that you set with clients about how you run the hiring process?
Yeah. I mean, it's a 27-page proposal.
Okay, cool.
Here is the short of it. I'm responsible from this moment forward, taking everything you're thinking and delivering what you need against your problem. It's as simple as that. You are responsible for showing up, doing the interview with us, because Anita and I'll talk about that in a second, doing the interview with us, and then spending a half an hour to 45 minutes after every interview debriefing and taking it apart. So it could be because we benchmark and then we continue to go out and do the search. I said, if you can guarantee me that you're going to show up for the interview, that you're going to do 45 minute debrief afterwards, we'll take the project. If you think you can't, we're not the guys, because you're telling me that it's not important enough. You got this big hairy ass problem, and we're going to solve it for you. I am not going to run after you. I got to chase candidates who already have jobs that they love. They're not looking for a new one. They don't like recruiters. I got to go in and endear myself to these people to bring them to the table. And then I've got to put this economic marriage together, and you might not be available. No. And you can't substitute. I will accept no substitutions. If you want to bring them along, your VP HR or a VP of engineering, that's fine. But you don't have somebody else show up for one of your interviews. If you can promise me that, we'll do the project.
I love it. And so it sounds like you and Anita run the interviews, which is unusual as well. Or
we do. But here's the logic, okay? It's twofold. And this is all in executive recruiting for dummies, by the way. This is not secret sauce. Most clients don't know what to ask, okay? You've seen our position profiles. We do an intake with a client that produces a 5 to 6 page overview that we send to candidates. So when they read this, even if they're not looking for a job, they want to interview. That's that side. Clients don't understand what questions they need to ask, A, to find out if they have the experience that's required, and B, to make sure they're not BSing them, okay? So we do all that for them. We write all the interview questions. I ask all the interview questions, and I tell clients, listen, I want you listening to the interview. I want you thinking about what somebody just said, because after I finish asking the question and they finish answering it, there's your opportunity, Mr. Employer, to jump in and go down a rabbit hole and ask some other questions. So what we do is we create an environment where we have a conversation. We have a conversation about the organization. We have a conversation about the person's background so that everybody can see if it fits or it doesn't. And generally speaking, it fits. Does that answer the question?
Brilliant. You run the interview, or you co-chair the interview with the client. You and Anita both do it.
And in the last couple of years, Corey, our son, who is the director of ops, he's on it as well.
Okay.
So you know we're on a Zoom call with anywhere from 5 to 8 people.
Okay.
And I introduce everybody when they pop on, and I tell candidates this ahead of time.
Of course.
I said, "We're not here to overwhelm you." I said, I'm here to ask the questions, as I've said. Anita won't say a word because she's listening to everything you say, because it's all going to be used against you later. But and she's brilliant. From the psychological assessment, EQI, part of the equation, she's brilliant. And she sees stuff that I don't see. And oftentimes the clients see stuff that we don't see because we're not nuanced enough in the business. Yeah. And this is what it's a team effort.
Okay. And then there's a debrief after each and every single interview. You don't do a do a block of interviews and then have a general no.
You so great question. I've run stuff like that 35 years ago, but when I went into some of the deeper searches that I needed to, real estate, construction, and tech, I don't know squat.
Mm.
Right? That's a whole nother story. So I'm there asking questions so that I'm getting answers and I think I'm answering the right question. And they're asking more and more of these questions. So we're benchmarking as we go. I'll go out and find someone that I think is, 90% fit from what I can see. Fit and psychological, and at least 85% fit experience wise. And then we'll do the interview. And, my first question, and people are going to groan, but my first question after every single one of these interviews is, Mark, how do you feel? Oh, is that an uncomfortable thing? Because now they have to quantify everything. I've asked them, how do they feel? Yeah. Well, I feel great, or I feel horrible, or I don't like, why? Because I don't care about... I don't care about, what I care about is understanding what I'm missing. Did I miss something in the candidate, in the fit or the experience? Or does a client have a blockage? I'll give you an example. We're hiring a VP for a company for a sales role, VP sales role. And the client's got a real blockage because we were out doing another search for them when they decided that this was easy and they went and did it themselves. Mm-hmm. And paid a fortune, guy came on board, didn't sell a stick of anything for 6 months. I had to let him go. So now they took what they thought was an easy thing, they blew it. And now every time we talk about something, I wasn't involved in that search at all. Every time we talk about something, it brings up a question that he asked or was answered. So now he's comparing candidates with the failure that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can do is step him through it. Until we get to, a clear field.
Interesting.
And that's what we're doing.
This is awesome. This is really good stuff. Because I don't know anyone else who does it the way that you're describing, David. Can I ask you about the cost of not having a person in place? Now, I think every executive, every hiring manager can understand that on a theoretical basis. But do you have any way of quantifying that for them so that they really understand that your fee is very good value?
Oh, absolutely. But before I answer that question, I have to point out that your friends at iIntro, they've got that down to a science, and you know it.
That's true.
They've got it down to a science. I've interviewed with these guys a couple of times. Anybody that's thinking, how do I get a client to talk about that? Go talk to the guys at iIntro. Well worth investing in that.
No, so that I know they have the cost of a bad hire calculator, right? Which quantifies it. But you're talking about the cost of not filling the role. Maybe they have that too. I'm not sure. But what's the David Perry formula for that?
Oh, I just simply asked them the question. So VP of sales, How much revenue, how much are they on? What are their KPIs this year? How much are they supposed to deliver? Huh, okay. So how's that working? Oh, why are they behind? Huh. Okay, so that if this keeps going, they're behind 5 million or 7 million now. If this goes for another quarter, is this linear? Are you another 7 million? Well, no, it's really only about 5. I said, oh, so you've got an extra 5 million that you don't care about. Well, no, I didn't say that. I said, well, no, you just did. I said, I'm not trying to trick you here. You just did. So let's talk about that. There's an opportunity cost, and the opportunity cost is you get it wrong again. If you get the money, by all means, save 30,000, you know, but if the 5 million is more important, maybe you should spend the 30 to get us on board and another 60. So even if you spend 100, you're still up 4.9 million. That's the way I think you need to think about it. Now, HR doesn't think that way, but the CEO and the chairman of the board, yes. So I've listened to a lot of your podcasts. I really enjoy them,
thanks,
by the way.
David.
I love listening to people that are smarter than me. So I'm always here. There's still a lot of people that deal with HR. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with HR. I've stopped picking on them about a decade ago. Now, most of them I just feel sorry for. And now, I don't mean that in a malicious way, but I still work with HR because every now and then you find a real gem. And the way you find out if you got a real gem is go on LinkedIn. What's their degree in? If it's in psychology or if it's in operations or if they've got experience in any other part of the business before they went into HR, you got a winner.
Right.
Because they understand it. They understand the whole and not just some of the pieces. And if they've experienced it, oh my God. Now there's someone you can partner with.
Right.
I mean, you can literally go and just look for VPs of HR and find ones that have got experience or an advanced degree and go talk to them. It's a whole different conversation. Completely.
Love it. Great.
But I generally prefer the CEO.
Distinction. What's an average deal size for you, David?
Revenue or fees?
The fee, your fee, your partner.
They're going to range from a low of 60
okay.
to 150, 200.
Okay. Fantastic.
Now, before anybody gets disappointed, oh, I'm not like that, if you have any listeners, mm-hmm. understand that the first deal I ever did mm-hmm. was for a store manager for a company, and the fee was $5,000.
Awesome.
And I got 50% of that against my $500 a month draw. So
that's funny.
Yes, you appreciate
yeah, that. Yeah, definitely. My first salary in recruiting was £10,500. And I remember my first placement fee. Yeah, it was similar. It was probably about $5,000 or the equivalent thereof. In fact, that was my average fee for a while, for the first year, I think, before I realized, hey, I should be working on jobs with bigger salaries because then I'll be doing the same amount of work. But I'll make more money. I don't know why it took me a year to figure that out, but in any case.
Probably because the life expectancy of the business, and I'm a little bit older than you, but the life expectancy of the business when I got in, and you know, it's not much better than that now, was about 45 days.
Yeah.
Most people lasted. They did two placements,
okay,
maybe three, but here's how it worked. The first placement, they got lucky. They found someone. The next person they placed was themselves.
right?
Or two friends in themselves, and they got out. When I joined ConsulPro, which is the firm that I was with before I started Perry Martell, I'd come back from my honeymoon. I'd had $85,000 in deals close. My boss, instead of congratulating me, fired me because he thought I got lucky. He said, you just got lucky. So he kept all the money. It's a well-known story.
Yeah.
And so I walked down the street to work for this. To interview with this other company, and they ended up hiring me. It took about 2 hours. And there's six guys there, and they sold me on this $100,000 a year opportunity. Fast forward, it's got to be, call it 2 months, but it wasn't. There's just me, the branch manager, the other five guys gone.
Yeah.
$100,000 gone. And that year, I was rookie of the year. I billed, I think, $99,000. My boss billed 119. That's, and they were so excited for me. They hadn't awarded Rookie of the Year for like 10 years. I was so depressed. It was unbelievable. But I stuck around and didn't leave until three quarters of the way through my second year.
Hilarious. Wow. And then here we are 35 years later. David, listen, I'm just conscious we're halfway through our time, and I want to ask you about this exciting website project you got, workinsight.io. Tell me what this is all about and how you got involved.
Workinsight.io is something that I started with my best friend, it actually was .com at the time, in 1982. There's a whole history of us doing stuff together until that point. And then we started on this latest project, and we were getting ready to bring it to fruition in, it's been a long time, 2008.
Okay.
And he had died. He had had a heart attack the year before and died. And so he took everything with him, all the secret codes, everything with him. So his brother and I, who had only, we'd only just met, met at the funeral, because I gave the eulogy, and Dave, I gave the eulogy for Kevin. Dave's brother said, we should finish this thing, you know, for Kevin's, you know, to honor Kevin. Absolutely great idea. Well, here we are. It's a long time later, man. And he didn't die in 2008. Sorry, he died in 2012.
Okay.
I had a stroke in 2008.
I remember that.
Another story.
Yeah.
So it's taken us all this time to build this site and another one.
Okay.
We've been offered money. We haven't taken any money. We haven't tried to raise any money. We built everything out of cash. I ran a guerrilla job search boot camp because of the Guerrilla Marketing for Job Hunter series. We sold 214 people a seat in a boot camp for $5,000 US each. And then we took that money. And by the way, everybody graduated. Everybody got a job.
Amazing.
And we took that money and rolled it into developing My New Job Hunt, which is one thing, and then Work Insight. And what Work Insight is I don't know if you experience this in the UK, but we experience it a lot in Canada and the States. There's a lot of brilliant companies out there who can't get the right people. And they can't get the right people, from my estimation, because they can't afford to spend $300 or $500 a month advertising for a whatever in one city, and then have to multiply that across the cities. So we put Work Insight together to democratize the recruiting industry.
Okay.
What we've built in Work Insight and the sister site is what a bunch of unnamed job boards and social media sites should have built. This is designed to help people get the right role. That's why it's free. It's free for recruiters to use and post. It's free for job hunters to come and find jobs and post their credentials. And we have, we're trying to democratize the hiring that way. This way, smaller companies who've got a great idea can actually find people and do it themselves. At the same time, so in my limited view of the world revolves around recruiting. If we don't place somebody on a given day, something doesn't happen somewhere. I mean, that's how important I think the recruiting industry is.
What do you mean by that, David?
Well, you know, take a VP of sales you're hiring. If you don't hire that VP of sales, nothing gets sold. Nothing happens at that company.
Got it.
So it's anything. So if we're not filling our orders, if we're not filling our mandates, you know, the company is standing still. So by making this tech platform available, I'm hoping recruiters will be able to find people and place them faster. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that candidates will be smart enough to come and post their credentials. And because the entire site is cloaked in anonymity,
okay,
the candidates are anonymous. Yeah. Recruiter, and this is the biggest beef candidates have against recruiters. You know, I called someone, they never called me back. So this site has been designed to be candidate centric. Mm-hmm. It's like Bumble, the dating site.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, it's the same sort of thing. Candidates can come and put as much information in as they want. Recruiters can find incredible depth of detail. And then if they're interested, they can go, hey, Ping, hey, Mark, I saw your, you know, profile. Or actually, they don't know. Hey, XYZ, blah, blah, blah. I saw your profile on Work Insight. I've got this kind of opportunity. Should we talk? And then you can start to have a dialogue back and forth. And the candidate gets to ask the right questions to make sure, yeah, this is something that I would be really interested in, and tell them why. And the recruiter's not under the pressure to do the song and dance or just answering questions. Because typically recruiters have to do a song and dance with candidates. Sure. Oh, it's a fantastic this and this and this. No, no, no. Talk about the details, because they don't have to tell the candidate who the client is.
Okay.
You know, so they're both matching up that way. And then when there's a marriage, they just go do their stuff. And the candidate, if they're smart, and most of them are, they leave their profile up. Why? Because it takes, in America right now, it takes an average of 38 weeks to find a new job.
Okay.
That's the unemployment expectation, 38 weeks. Now, most people are going to have to get another job between 18 and 24 months. That's how long the typical job lasts. I'm an economist and a labor statistician by training. So I follow the U.S. Labor Board. So these are hard numbers. So answer me this. If someone's got a job and it's only going to last 18 months and all of a sudden they'll let go, well, now they got to wait 38 weeks typically to get another job. I don't know very many people that have got 10 months of salary in the bank.
Hardly anyone.
So it's insanity. So what they do with Work Insight is you find a job, you can either turn it off, you can put it on pause, whatever you want, or just the offers keep coming in. And this will give candidates the opportunity to better themselves over time.
Yeah.
And I believe it will force employers to be smarter and fairer with the candidates that they have. Because now all of a sudden, the whole market is fluid. So now, let's talk about OpenAI in a second, if you're going to go there.
Yeah, let's.
But, because that's what the next book's all about, not OpenAI specifically, but this concept. We're removing the blockages.
Mm.
I mean, I was part of Simply Hired's launch team.
Okay.
And I was on Zoom's advisory board and a whole bunch of other job boards. So I know what they do. I know how they make money. And that's one side of the equation. What they don't do is solve the problem. You know, as an employer, I need this. How do I find them? They don't make it easy. None of them, even the social media sites. And for the candidates, they don't make it easy either. There's all kinds of blockages along the way. So I'm taking the it's going to cost money blockage out. I'm taking the anonymity so that I can actually have a conversation with a recruiter. And we're all great people. Let's be honest. I haven't met a recruiter yet I haven't liked. So it takes all with the anonymity, we take the hassle out of dealing with a recruiter, because all of a sudden both sides can be completely honest. You know, when workinsight.io, when you come in as a candidate, and this is the where we're going with this, we say, hey, you know what? Why don't you? We've all heard the term hired for skill, fired for fit. I actually screamed the last time someone said this in a conference. I was at a conference and I just howled, and I apologize. But we've known for four decades, hired for skill, fired for fit. If we know this doesn't work, and we know that the turnover rate stays at a steady 24%, why don't we fix that?
Absolutely.
So what we've done with Work Insight, you should come in as a candidate and we say, hey, take a psych assessment. It's free. And we'll tell you, here are the types of companies you're going to fit well with. And where we're going with this over time is you'll come to Work Insight in a couple of years from now and you'll say, okay, I did the psych assessment. I am a purple. You know, we're going to color companies and their cultures, different colors.
Okay.
So I'm a purple. So forget looking for skills. Look for a company that you know you fit the culture. I'm a purple, so I go looking for. I just look inside the purples.
I go to work. Let's pretend I'm a candidate. I'm looking for a new job. Now, who's this for? By the way, is it like in terms of role, function, industry, and location? Who is the target audience for WorkInsight.io?
Well, I'm sorry to say that the one prerequisite, you got to speak English.
Okay.
And read English.
Got it.
We've not done it in any other language, not going to until we have to.
Okay.
Remember, I paid for all this. Doing all those languages would have been just silly.
I hear you. So I'm an English speaker, but yeah. Is it any type of job, anywhere?
Anything. Anything.
What, North America or?
English-speaking world.
Oh, the English-speaking world. Wow. Okay.
So here's what we did. Mm-hmm. You know what an aggregator is? Well, Kevin, David's brother, wrote the first aggregator back in 98.
Okay.
And he thought it was a toy. I thought it was a business. He thought it was a toy until Simply Hired and Indeed came along and got like $135 million to build an aggregator. And then I looked at him and I said, okay, but he's an engineer. I'm a BA, right? So we built an aggregator. Actually, it's a super aggregator. And it's an aggregator that aggregates the aggregators.
Okay.
And you can look on the site today. In the last year and a bit, it's already cycled through 17.5 million jobs. The jobs stay on the site. I think it's 10 days. It might be 15 days. So there might only be 80,000 jobs on it right now or something like that. But it's typically 15 days and it falls off. And we've just been collecting the email addresses of all the recruiters that posted all these jobs. And now we'll start going out to them and saying, okay, do you want to spend your time posting? Or do you want to spend your time interviewing qualified candidates? So that's what we're going to do with that. Does that answer your question, Mark?
Sure. So, and then apart from the anonymity, I'm getting that. How is this different from another job board, Monster, Indeed, you know, Simply Hired or what have you?
Far more depth.
Okay.
On the candidate side, far more depth. You get to talk about who you are, what you've done, what you're interested in. We took the model for Work Insight on the candidate side, beside the anonymity. And I've just tagged that with Bumble because it's easy to explain.
Okay, got it.
Understand.
So it is more, it's almost like a dating site where you really.
It is. I can't remember the name of the big dating site. Anyway, it'll come to me 5 minutes after we finish. But we modeled it the same way. And in fact, this company actually started a job board as well. And we were in the running to buy it.
Oh.
I bowed out at $12 million.
Wow. You're not talking about Tinder.
Nope. No. No, it's not Tinder. There was a professor that was the inventor of this.
Okay.
And he just retired off the board about 3 years ago.
Okay. So
I should write
it's
this
interesting
down.
That you went for Bumble because I understand, or I don't know much. I've been married for coming up for 25 years, so I don't know a lot about dating apps, but I do know that the lady who founded Bumble had a falling out with the founder at Tinder, and she set up a competitive dating app, which is more centered to the female. I think that's
correct. So this is the exact same. You can look at it the exact same way. This one's candidate centric. There's the only real value, and I say this to clients all the time. The only real value is in the candidate.
Okay.
I mean, jobs have no value, none, because every client has 10 or 15 competitors. If they can't find the best person for that job, they lose. And the candidates have been trained to come on and click and apply for jobs because they think it's, you know, swipe left, swipe right, right? How well is that working? It's not. Okay. But we need this crush right now that we've had the last year or two to prove that. So what we've built is a site that aligns what the employer requires with what you have and your interests. And you do it in complete anonymity. It goes into far more depth than most people are going to like. And if I've never been on a dating site either, but I know how they work.
Yeah.
And this is a candidate-centric job board.
Awesome. So how can recruitment agencies use Work Insight?
Absolutely. It was built for them.
Okay. Fantastic.
It was built for our industry. I mean, I'm sorry if I'm coming off as yelling, but I mean, man, I was I was 113,000 person on LinkedIn.
Oh, really? You were number 113?
113,000.
Oh, okay.
I was in the first 2 weeks. Most of the recruiters around the world, if they could actually trace back who they got the invite from, and then who they got the invite, it comes, seriously, it comes back to me.
That's hilarious.
Even Shally Steckrell comes back to me, but yeah. So that's,
hey, I mean, David, shows quick, you my quick age. Aside, I remember inviting people to LinkedIn way back in the beginning, and people had no idea what you were inviting them to do. They're like, what is this? It looks suspicious. I don't, what's it all about? I don't know if I want to join it. It was, you had to explain, like when you sent someone an invitation to join LinkedIn, you had to explain what it was all about. And you kind of like, it's sort of like Facebook, but for business. And they're like, well, I'm not sure. So people were really skeptical about it. So what we're saying is hopefully by using Work Insights, that's going to be, we're not going to be dependent on LinkedIn to find our candidates. That's the idea then.
That's one of the benefits, yes. There's nothing on Work Insight but a transaction.
Okay.
A recruiter, an employer, a third-party recruiter, an agency needs a candidate that's got the skills. That's it. You know, we're not posting slide decks. We're not putting up carousels. We're not having discussions. You know, we are going to release, one of the next releases, recruiters will be able to come in. And right now, if you're a specialist in XYZ, you can set yourself up as a specialist in XYZ. So if a candidate's coming in, I'm looking for a specialist in XYZ, they'll be able to find you. And recruiters will be able to put up blog posts to show that they're an expert.
Okay.
But that's the extent of it. This is not a social network. This is a platform for people to find employment.
David, I don't understand how you make money from this. What is this? What is the business model?
Oh, real simple. You watch TV?
Yep.
Okay. So if you watch TV, unless you've got cable, TV's free. How do they pay for it?
Advertising.
Ads.
Yeah.
In this case, there will be at the bottom, or there will be on the site, if you're a job hunter or if you're a recruiter, oh, let's use you. God knows there's, 100,000 people, 100,000 recruiters in Europe or in England, Canada, in the US. And probably all but six of them could use talking to you, if not on a regular basis, occasionally.
Okay.
So they're customers. So I'll ask you right now. I'm in the process of talking to coaches,
okay,
just a couple, who will make them, who I'll put in the marketplace. And if somebody finds you, mm-hmm, there'll be a very small fee, and they sign up, there'll be a very, very small fee, and you can pick up the phone and say, hey, David, so-and-so just, signed up with me. I'm going to send you a check. Boom, done.
Awesome.
Because posting a job is free. Finding a job is free. If you want advice, nobody should work for free, but we haven't done anything. It's just a trading platform, right? So they'll be able to find coaches. I'll put up my books.
Yeah.
I'm putting up other people's books, other people's programs. So what we end up with is lack of a better term, we end up with the Oracle of recruiting. It's all in that one place.
That's cool.
And when I pass on, I will have set up the an advisory board.
Okay.
So it just keeps going.
Awesome. That's fantastic, David. So I know that your book hasn't been published yet, but can you just tease us about what it's going to be about? And in fact, I think people can watch a video or something about. Give me the website where they can find out about the book.
You can go to perrymartell.com. Yeah. And if you use the search tag, you should search for Revolutions Need Leaders.
Okay.
I think that's all you need. And it'll bring up a couple of pages, but one of them has a video on it. So what's the book about? The book is about the changes that we're all going through. We can talk about OpenAI in a second. I believe, and I've said this for the last couple of years, you heard me say it, and a couple of your contemporaries laughed when I said it, we're in the golden age of recruitment.
Okay.
Okay. But it's different. It's no recruiting going forward to be successful and profitable as a recruiter. It's not going to be about the transaction. It's going to be about what value you bring to the equation. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll give you an example. Let's use OpenAI as an example. OpenAI, 700, when Sam Altman got turfed, 770 people signed a piece of paper that says, bring him back or we're gone. Pardon my word, but holy fuck.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Seriously. If that didn't put a lightning bolt through the spine of every executive and every HR manager in the world, they had to have been dead. Because now, all of a sudden, the employers have said, people are our greatest asset. Well, they just showed it, didn't they?
Yeah.
So employers need to understand how to hire a leader like a Sam Altman, a leader that can make people believe in themselves, believe in each other, and believe in the cause. Yeah. And not die for it, not like the Marines, but literally 770 people said, hey, we ain't bluffing.
Yeah.
And it's clear they weren't. That's power. But imagine harnessing that. Imagine having a company that can harness that to get their products to market, to get their services to market. This is massive.
Yeah.
That's a different type of individual you need. And most of these people, we call them 4.0 leaders,
okay,
they all have jobs.
Yeah.
And they're not looking for jobs. And they don't talk to recruiters. So how do you find them? Well, that's what the next book is about. And it uses concepts like HDR, high definition recruitment.
Okay.
Or high definition recruitment. I mean, how many of your viewers or listeners have done a SWOT analysis or a gap analysis or a needs analysis with their clients or forced their clients to do it so that when they went to the market, they actually had a good idea of what they actually needed to get this done, right? In terms of skill sets, experience, all that kind of stuff, and could actually talk with credibility to prospects who didn't want to talk to them. And that's the problem, right? So most companies never do the introspective work necessary to dig deep enough to actually have a conversation with an industry 4.0 leader or a leader that they want to bring across. And then how do you take that from, okay, I've got this. I built my position profile. This is what our leader looks like. How do you find out where they are? You can't advertise. They don't pick up the phone. You can ask people, well, who do you know? When was the last time that worked? So there is a better way of using LinkedIn mm-hmm. to both signal these people. And by signal, I mean, find out who they are and then vet them before you even talk to them. So with the first time you talk to them, you know what they're interested in, what their causes are that they believe mm-hmm. in, which gives you the opportunity to present that part of the role to them first, so you capture their attention. Make sense?
Sort of. There's a lot to unpack there. First,
I'm taking all the, you know, are you familiar with social media astroturfing?
No.
Oh, God. I can't. So social media astroturfing are, you've met these candidates who, you know, leave in their LinkedIn profile, you know, accomplishments, things they did that you go, wow, I got to call that guy if ever I need this. Yeah. 4.0 leaders don't do that.
Huh.
They don't. Because they're not interested in being found.
Right.
And 4.0 leaders are about the team. A 4.0 leader is not about, I must deliver a fantastic outcome.
Yeah.
A 4.0 leader is all about, I must deliver a team that delivers a fantastic outcome.
Got it.
So they are leading from the back and in most cases, not even visible. So how do you find someone that's invisible? That's what this book's about. How do you talk to somebody who doesn't want to talk to you? That's what this is all about. And how do you make sure you're not getting bushwhacked? You know, that, you know, someone isn't doing the social media astroturfing. It's a page and a half, solves it all. So that's what this next book is about. And it's designed to help hiring managers, employers, and especially recruiters find those leaders that are going to help them help their clients build a business that's substantial. You know, that where there's zero turnover and people go, oh, I survive on turnover. No, you don't. You survive on growth.
Right.
Okay. You hire, you know, Nortel 20 years ago, before they had all their ups and downs, tried to hire us to hire, it was like 300,000 engineers for a new division. And I was dealing with the CEO at the time and the COO, and I said, I have no interest in doing this search. I have interest in helping you, but no interest in hiring 300,000 engineers. It was more than $2 million in fees. I said, I hate them. I said, I don't like engineers because they don't make business. They don't make business decisions. They make, oh, I want a bigger monitor, or wrong reasons. So I said, I know what you're trying to build. You need three legs. I said, I'll hire a VP for this, this, and this. Those VPs, if they're good, and they will attract their own team. So there was another company that was in the networking slash telephony business. And I outlifted, really, 300 people.
Wow. Okay.
Hired the three engineers, and they brought their teams with them. To the point where the other company that had lost all the people in one shot, like over about 2 weeks when this was done, took out a billboard across the street from the office where these engineers were working, big billboard that said, you know who you are and who you work for. Most people in Ottawa didn't get the joke. Some people did. But that was it.
Hey, David, one final question. Before I share that, by the way, in the show notes, we'll put a link to where people can download chapter one of Revolutions Need Leaders. It's a long...
I'll send you a link.
Yeah. I've got the link. I can see it now in front of me. So it's perrymartell.com. Yeah, people can search for Revolutions. They'll find it, but we'll just give them the link in the show notes. I meant to ask you, and then you reminded me with something you just said. Your 27-page proposal, what the heck is in your 27-page proposal?
Our understanding mm-hmm. of their issue and how we're going to solve it mm-hmm. and why they need to believe that we can solve it, including here's references, and we have highlights. Here are four references. Call these people.
Okay.
And by the way, Mark, if they don't call the people, we don't take the next meeting.
Wow.
I am not going to spend my time telling you how good I am. Why would I? This is not a dog and pony show.
Mm-hmm.
You know? No, there's four references. And I tell people this, four references in there. Call those people and talk to them before we talk again. I also stick in links to two videos,
okay,
which are essentially the same thing. So that proposal is our understanding of what your issue is, how we're going to solve it, why you need to believe that we're going to solve it, how we're going to work together, exactly what we're going to do, and what you as a client are responsible for. I've had all kinds of people. The only person that's got a copy of this proposal is Skip Freeman.
Aha, that's hilarious. Because
he's under penalty of death if he shares it. I've been asked many times.
Because Skip's talked about this proposal. How do you know Skip?
Oh, God, I've known Skip for ages.
Because he talked about, we have this, now, and maybe it was 27 pages, but he said, we have this detailed proposal, and he explained his sales process and how he converts the retainer and that kind of stuff. So I didn't realize that that he learned that from you.
Oh, well, so this is the beauty of our industry, right? I trust Skip with my family, okay?
He's a great guy.
I shared my proposal. Oh, he's a fantastic guy. And newlywed. He just got married. He's a newlywed as of middle of December. Anyway, yeah.
Congratulations, Skip, if you're listening.
And he asked me for it. And I said, sure, because he'd shared some stuff with me. I had him put a piece in one of the guerrilla marketing books.
Okay.
And he did that because I read his book. I mean, anybody who writes anything, I'm going to read it. You know, if nothing else, I'm a cheerleader, right? So I phoned him up and said, I love this stuff. So we started talking. So when he asked me for my proposal, I said, sure, done. So what he did is he wrote it in his style and he sends it back to me. And I'm reading this going, this is really good. Why didn't I think of that? So I called him up. I said, would you mind if I'll put my own spin on it? He said, no, go ahead. You know?
Amazing.
And when I wrote the Inside Out approach, which is available on our website, it's our process. So rather than forcing clients to read two of my books, because we know that's not going to happen, I condensed Hiring Greatness and Executive Recruiting for Dummies into 10 pages.
Okay.
It's available for free on the website. It's called the Inside Out approach. It's what we do,
yeah,
how we do it, yeah, why it matters, and how we partner with clients and how that all works out.
I love it. David, something that we do in our coaching program that I think you'd appreciate is the beauty of having a community of really smart, ambitious, thoughtful, you know, recruiters who are like-minded together is that we learn from each other. Like, people join our program because they want to learn from me, from Leanne, from Julie, our coaching team. But actually, I learn from our clients every day, and they learn from each other. And so anytime someone does something brilliant, we ask them to share it with the rest of the group. And so we'll do what we call a hot seat. So recently, one of our clients, Rebecca Hastings, she's now 100% retained. I need to get her on the podcast. I don't know why she's not been on yet. Mental note. But she wins virtually 100% of the pitches of the business she wants. Like you, she doesn't take every search. But the ones she wants, she gets almost 100%.
I'm listening.
Yeah. And so she presented, we did a live summit back in the summer in Edinburgh. She presented her way, she called it visualizing value to differentiate your service. And she talked about how she runs those meetings, and she shared her whole proposal document and everything. And like you, she's got a very extensive proposal, but she also, it's almost like a demo because she shows people exactly how she's going to deliver the outcome. Rather than just tell them how good she is, she actually shows them what's involved, and their people are blown away, and they sign up. And so she shared that with the rest of our group. So that's what I love, is recruiters who are willing to help and support each other in order for everybody to win. You shared your exchange with Skip Freeman, which is powerful, and you both benefited from that. And that's the kind of stuff that we promote within our program as well, that mutual helping one another.
So an observation.
Yeah.
And then an idea.
Go for it.
And then a last comment, and I'll shut up. I swear, everybody. Observation, you know, I probably know every recruiting coach in the world that speaks English. You have done an incredible job of building a community that supports each other. And I just got to tell you, hands down, I'm just so impressed. I really am so impressed. My idea would be, when you have someone like me on, I would love to, if I was watching, I would love to get a transcript. I would pay for it. I thought about this yesterday. Mm. I would pay for a transcript of everything that we talked about.
Okay.
And I would pay for it if at the end of this, you summarized it into, here's what you should have learned, and then ask a couple of questions about how would you apply these, how could these ideas be applied to your business? I think if you took it once, I don't know if you already do that. I apologize.
No, I don't.
I don't know, David, if you already do that.
I love that idea. Sorry, I interrupted. Please continue.
No, I was just going to say, for $9.99 or whatever you wanted to charge, mm-hmm. and I would charge to make sure that you just don't get people who say, "Oh yeah, I'm going to read it," and then it sits on their desktop. If there's no money charged, there's no value, there's no action. But I would pay money for that. I would pay money for that, and I'm the cheapest guy you're ever going to meet.
David, thank you so much for the compliment. I sincerely appreciate that. That means a lot to me, especially coming from you. And I am going to action that suggestion right away. It's genius. That's definitely happening.
So can I make two more comments and then I shut up?
Sure. Okay. Keep it coming.
I think your listeners would enjoy reading that book.
The Win Without Pitching Manifesto.
Yeah. Everything's reversed on my side. I don't get why. But that's it's a title.
Who is the author?
The Win Without Blair Enns, E-N-N-S.
E-N-N-S. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. I'll check. I read it, and then I gave it to my son. He goes, "Holy shit, we do almost all this now." I said, "Yeah. So can you operationalize the rest of it?" Because he's training to take the business, right? I would do that. And the other thing is, I can send you a link. Probably the one of the best things that I do that most people don't do, it's not because I'm smart, is ask good questions. And I say that because I'm not the smartest bulb on the tree. I get that. But I learn fast. And if someone else has done it, I can do it better. So I have an author who does nothing but write books about the questions you should be asking your clients, A, to get business, and B, to get more business. And that's the idea. And if more recruiters could learn to approach clients like this, they'd get more business, and we'd get more of the world's problems taken care of because we'd all have more time because stuff would just get done faster. And the secret is in asking the right question. You know, I had someone a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago now, on a Zoom call, ask me, what keeps you up at night? And I said, okay, so you're sitting down, right? She said, yes. I said, okay, so take this in the spirit that it's meant. I'm going to tell you, that's the most asinine question you could possibly ask someone like me or any other CEO or senior business person for the following reasons. I said, now, I'll tell you what the reasons are if you have the stomach to sit and listen to this. She's like, she's 30 nothing. She takes a pen out of her mouth. She sits up. She says, go. And we talked for about another hour. But, you know, and I felt good because I'm helping her with her career and her clients are going to benefit. But it's stuff like that. You know, Seth Godin, if I got a question, like I read all Seth's stuff, I've called him on multiple occasions to go, okay, I need you to come to Ottawa to give us a seminar. How much is it going to cost me? $80,000 plus the first class tickets. Okay, fine. And this is what I need it on. So learn from other people. You know, you're a conduit to everybody, but learn from other people, and especially people outside our industry, because yes, we really are walking into a time where we become full-blown management consultants.
Yes.
People can't do what we do. They can't. And I shouldn't say that. They can. They don't have the time. They just want to know that you actually know what you're doing. And asking questions like that and approaching it the way we've talked about today forces them to give you the respect that you know you're due. And rather than feel slighted by a client, you might as well take their shoe off and whack them in the head right away. And then if you survive, it's a great relationship. It's not for everybody, but it is. Because the first time you rip someone's shoe off and whack them upside of the head and give it back to them, oh my God, you've changed the dynamic completely, right?
That would change someone's state. Absolutely. David, 100% agree. The art of asking questions and actually listening and then challenging the customer, 100%. It's fun. People think recruiters have the gift of the gab. No, the best recruiters ask the right questions and,
yep,
you know, and then shut up. David, it's been an absolute honor and so much fun catching up with you again.
Thank you very much, sir. It's always a pleasure.